Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Well, we'll kick off. As you can see, my name is Stephen Hyde. I'm a professor in management practice. Not at all knowledgeable about what Caroline is going to be talking about today, apart from the fact that I've been in management for God knows how many years, 30 years or whatever, and have had inevitably a number of management issues that have had to be dealt with. I don't think we've ever actually involved ACAS, but I've certainly been to an employment tribunal in the past as a participant, and it's quite scary. But I'll just be feeding questions to Caroline. But more important than me feeding questions, any of you guys, any time, just pipe up with questions and we'll go along. Without further ado, Caroline.
Okay.
You're from ACAS, your regional manager, east of England. Maybe what you could do, first of all, just do a quick run through of your career to date, how it's led you to where you are.
Okay, and I might deal a bit with the employability thing, because all of us started, you know, with little experience, with just a few qualifications. I left school when I was 17, and I took on a scheme working at the tax office, which led to a casual job at the redundancy payments office. And after a while, they offered me a permanent contract, and that eventually led me to work for the employment tribunal, and then that led me to a management job in ACAS. And I've been with ACAS since 1996, something I think I'm quite intensely proud of, actually. Not that I've survived with ACAS, but that because of ACAS and what it does. I have developed through the ranks and to now spending 18 months as a sort of the director here in the east of England, with about 40 staff involved in different activities.
40 staff in the east of England?
Yeah. Right. So a third of them roughly would be on helpline, answering queries from employees, employers who haven't found what they wanted on our website, really, or who wonder have a problem, have an employment-related problem they want some support with. And then about a third of them are engaged in conciliation. So mostly that's individual conciliation. And when you say mandatory, early conciliation is still voluntary, but you do need a certificate in most cases to say that you've notified us. So so about a third roughly are engaged in that. And then there's another percentage. Some of them are doing admin, some are managers. And the remainder in each county, generally we have a senior advisor who deals with collective conciliation, which is something that ACAS is known for, where there's perhaps a dispute in a workplace. And so they're dealing with that sort of issues. They'd be helping organisations deal with disputes, prevent disputes by improving things, and doing sort of training in the workplace too. So we do training for small employers too. It's cheaper, in each county there's somebody who can help in that way. So I've been with ACAS since 1996. I started as a manager dealing with admin, and then I spent about 4 years doing conciliation. Since then, I've done different management jobs, from resource management, stats and recruitment and budgets, to conciliation management.
And could you do a very quick whistle-stop tour of the process, if you like, of when something might crop up in a, or the different types of issues that might crop up in a business or an organisation?
Okay.
For a couple of typical examples.
Okay, so shall we look at the journey of a business, somebody starting up on their own, deciding to take on their first employee, to becoming a multinational, Richard Branson sort of thing. So it should take all in 45 minutes. That'd be brilliant, won't it? Okay.
No, I only want to do this in 5 minutes. There's lots of other questions.
Okay. Oh, right. A smaller businesses, new employers, have quite a steep learning curve to get things right. And so initially, I expect they'd go to the tax office, set themselves up, and they hopefully would find out, either from the website or from talking to somebody, their friends, that there is support from ACAS. So they would go on, I hope they would go on our website and they would go through the online training packages, which are free. And they would read the booklets, all of which, there's, for instance, when you take on an employee, you need to really give them and write down their main terms and conditions. It doesn't have to be a big, long contract, 50 pages long, but you do need to, for clarity's sake, you need to write those things down. Well, there's a template on the website. So hopefully they'll go on the website. However, when that employee then is a problem, perhaps, they might need further guidance. Now, they could go on the website and actually type in a question and fire that off into the helpline. But what we find is that that generates other questions. So they'll then ring the helpline, I'd imagine. So they might say, Joe Bloggs hasn't been here for 2 days. I'm really fed up with this. I can't put up with it. I'm going to tell him to go away. Okay? And so the helpline advisor will, in an impartial way, because we have to be impartial, we don't speak from either side, we'll say, well, hang on, what is the underlying issue here? Talk to them. What procedures have you got in place? What does your contract, your main terms and conditions say? So they'll then talk them through, ask them a number of questions, and then give them the next step, so which will hopefully keep them out of trouble. And if it's an employee that rings and has been told so-and-so is bullying me, they'll also get, you can, talk to your employer about it. Look at your procedures. Is there a grievance procedure? Put in a grievance. So hopefully that sort of intervention will mean that the working relationship can continue and be productive and grow, and individuals can grow and businesses can grow, because there's no way of hiding that disputes in the workplace, like disputes in family life or disputes anywhere, are destructive, time consuming, worrying. If they escalate, it's a big issue.
Radio Lab 97.1 FM.
If they haven't got a discipline or grievance procedure, we do codes of practice, there's three, but there's also in the back of these booklets that they can download free. It actually tells, it's got standard letters and there's basic procedures. So, but I suppose the issue is reaching them at the right time, because once the horse is bolted, there's other services that come into play.
I guess that's the point, isn't it? So you're talking about the example of this person who's just started their business and they got their first employee or first two or three employees. What's going to make me think of going onto an ACAS website as opposed to just saying, right, you're out?
I suppose the media's has done quite a good job in raising awareness of employment law and employment legislation and the outcomes. And certainly the most salacious cases of big companies with very expensive employees have hit the newspapers. And so hopefully people do look before they leap. There are numbers that don't, but they don't do it. Hopefully they don't do it a second time.
Right.
I'll give you an example, because I know you wanted me to give some examples. One of the cases I dealt with years ago was a small hairdressing salon who'd taken a new member of staff on, who did have an absence problem. Now, that absence problem related to the fact that they were pregnant, which they didn't look before they leaped. So they sent the employee a letter saying, we're dismissing you because you're pregnant. Now, as you will know, only women get pregnant, and that is discriminatory. Now, when I visited this particular employer, he said to me, well, look, she really wasn't fitting in. She'd been working on the boats, and she came into this salon, which deals with older clientele, with her belly button out, and it just wasn't working. And I was just saving her feelings. That's why I wrote that letter. Now, that case did go to tribunal. There was an award made. Now, it wasn't a bigger... The reason that case didn't settle was because the employee's expectation, the former employee's expectation, was huge. Because you hear about discrimination, and you might think that you get masses and masses and masses of amounts because it's unlimited compensation. But in practical terms, tribunals try and be reasonable. And so what she got, if you took off the fee she paid to her representative, probably wasn't in line with her expectations.
So many employers are very conscious of the rules and fear of breaking the rules and the costs and the time involved of getting involved in disputes and that sort of thing, that they are inclined to look for appropriate help and so on from ACAS or wherever.
I mean, we try to get our employers to sign up for our newsletter, and that one of the things that does is tries to keep them up to date on legal things that are coming up. Although we're not legally qualified, we're sharing best practice, really. And that also invites them to reasonably priced sessions, which help them to talk with their peers and to flag up the things that they need to think for before they put their foot in it.
With increasing emphasis being put on employers, with pension provision, etc., is that leading to more issues ending up at ACAS?
The answer to that is it hasn't really, to the helpline, it hasn't increased the number of queries we've got, because most of our queries don't focus on that. They're about the pension queries may well be directed to other sources, I suspect. We roughly a year, nationally, not just Bury, get about just under a million calls a year.
A million calls? Nationally?
Yeah, and nationally.
The region. Right, a million calls.
The helpline is open from 8 to 8 Saturday mornings, so it's quite a good service.
Roughly how many of that million end up right at the end of the process at tribunal? Do you know any idea how many tribunals there might be in a year?
The numbers have fallen. I don't know the current number off the top of my head. We wouldn't trace, when you've called the helpline, that's finished then, you know, so that we don't trace employer journeys in that way.
Right.
If you are in conciliation, so then if we pick that situation up where it's in dispute, somebody has left, they feel they haven't been paid the right amount, they are aggrieved by the way they've been dealt with, and then they'll probably take advice. It may be from a law centre, it might be from a trade union, or a citizen advice bureau, or a solicitor. They may well then, at that stage, I suppose, contact the employer and see if it can be sorted out. If they want to put in a tribunal claim, then in most cases, I think a few very small exceptions, they'll need to notify ACAS. And that will give them access to what they call as early conciliation, which is the new thing that started in just over a year ago. Now, that is where you have a month, principally, talk about the issue and see if we have a chance to see if we can resolve it. And a number do. Some will, in most cases, I think it's about, there's under 10% that individuals that don't want to, they just want their certificate and to go on with the tribunal process. And there's about 10% of employers that similarly say, I don't want to talk about this. He could do his worst, or she could do her worst. But most of them, there's some discussion and we see if we can resolve it. The conciliators will, they also have to be impartial. It's a confidential service. They keep notes for their own benefit. They will, within a day or two, they will contact the parties. They'll explain the role of ACAS, and that the purpose of the intervention is to try and sort it out. They will talk, they'll find out about what the situation is. They will explore how a tribunal might process it, what, you know, if it's unfair dismissal, what a tribunal will be looking at, you know, a fair reason, the way it's handled, reasonableness. They'll look at the individual situation, they'll help them, try and influence them and help them to move on and think about what the future looks like and what they need for the future. And armed with that, they'll then go and talk to the employer if the individual's happy with that. You know, sometimes the cheque really is in the post.
How is ACAS funded?
In a number of ways, really. If it's helpline or conciliation, they're granting aid funded, so it's tax funded. If it's training, it's funded by the employer. If it's mediation, it's funded by the employer, mostly.
You're Luton. Your music. Radio Lab 97.1 FM.
For governments, for civil servants or people working either, for local government or for national government,
yes.
How do any employment disputes get resolved? Okay. Do they use ACAS or do they use a different service?
They use ACAS, is the answer. I suppose there's two things. ACAS is a non-departmental government body. We're governed by a council which is impartial in as much as it has equal numbers of employers, employee reps and academics. So it's at arm's length from the... Another thing ACAS is known for is collective conciliation, which is normally through trade unions. They might not be happy in using us if we weren't under direct control of government, you see.
So would ACAS have been involved in the ongoing junior doctors dispute?
ACAS will be involved, yeah.
Do you want to expand on that a bit?
Well, ACAS would get involved in a number of ways in those big collective disputes. Often, it's one of the parties will come to us. Yeah, it's very similar in some ways to individual conciliation. Apart from it's not called early conciliation and you don't get a certificate. We will either be approached by one of the parties or by both the parties, or we will notice it and contact the parties. And sometimes they will be ready to talk and there'll be meetings arranged. And sometimes we'll be politely told to wait, you know. So, I don't think I can really comment particularly on that particular dispute, but rather than say there are collective issues, collective disputes and helping resolve collective disputes is, collective disputes can have a huge impact, and that dispute could have a huge impact on the economy and on, you know, all of us. So there is a great, you know, that is a priority for us. And years ago, I remember interviewing a member of staff, a potential member of staff, and that's really all they knew about ACAS. They hadn't checked the website before they came to their interview. So that tends to be what we're known for. Because trade union numbers and trade union density has fallen, that sort of thing is actually very small, but it is a priority for us, and it is important because of the costs. We did a report on our services looking at the impact on that, and there's, you know, potentially the costs of that sort of issue can, you know, even reputationally and nationally of that sort of thing.
We were chatting before this session started about some examples. I think it's quite good for people to get some examples. And you had two interesting ones that we were talking about. Do you want to talk about the supermarket?
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask a question, I think. If you were a big employer and got involved in retail, you observed, or a member of your staff observed, somebody taking the pounds that you put in supermarket trolleys, What action do you think you, as an employer, ought to take?
This is Radio Lab. You're Luton. Your music.
That is what happened. But it actually, when I first heard about it, the individual had been dismissed, and their mum, they had learning difficulties, and their mum and dad were up in arms. in what was one of my early cases, I went to see the individual. And because although they were representing themselves, the people to actually that would pull in the strings were the mum and dad. Have you been into sort of like unfair dismissal? Because it was an unfair dismissal complaint. So you'll know that the first thing a tribunal is going to look for when somebody qualifies for that is look for a fair reason. And that one of the fair reason is conduct. And obviously theft, if that is what it is, well, taking something like that can be construed as conduct. So, and then the rest of it, and then the tribunal, there is a band of reasonable responses, and they're taking into account the size and administrative resource of the employer, but they look at the process, really. Lots of it is to do with process. So when you say, you know, I think someone said, go through the disciplinary process, go through an investigation, that particular employer had ticked those boxes. And
and did that end up going to tribunal in the end, or
no, it didn't.
So how was it resolved?
There was a conciliatory settlement. So,
which was what?
Well, I can't remember precisely the detail, but it would have been probably relates to money.
So, did the parents want? I assume it was boy. Want their son or daughter to get their job back, to be reinstated, or did they want money, compensation, and was it a question of just haggling on the amount of compensation? Or
the mum and dad, like many mum and dads, thought their son or daughter had been treated appallingly,
right,
because it was £1. They had learning difficulties and they'd lost their job.
Yep.
And that is a summary of, you know, the situation. Mm. The employer has had policies which said that wasn't acceptable. They had gone through their process. They would have said, they would have thought they couldn't have done any more. Bearing in mind they did have sympathy, you know, that the individual did have learning difficulties. The individual wasn't saying this was because of discrimination. They were just saying it was £1.
Yeah.
and it's out of proportion.
So if you employ somebody with learning difficulties, are they able to comprehend all the details of the employment contract? Is it reasonable to expect them to understand all the...
Compared to
a person who hasn't got learning difficulties? And how, you know, I know it's all shades of grey, but
yes,
it's an interesting one, isn't it?
I think there's a number of factors in that. And not just in the end of the contract. There's disability and whether that individual is disabled within the meaning of the Act, which would place an extra burden on the employer and obligation to make reasonable adjustments. And that might be explaining things and being clearer. But it's also, even when it's not a disability, because it doesn't affect their normal day-to-day activities, their employers want the best out of their employees. And to get the best out of the employees, you need to respond to what they're like, okay? And because that's something I've learned, you know. I know in my working life, I've learned about my strengths and my weaknesses, and the fact that I need other people to help me, and it makes a better outcome if I take into account other people's points of view and build better. We can build better solutions together. So employers that appreciate that will want to talk and tease out the things. So if you leave out the dispute, the loss of an employee, having to find another person to do that job, you know, what the effect on the rest of them, the effect on that individual claiming benefit possibly, finding it extremely difficult to get another job, the economic benefits on for all of us and on that family.
Radio Lab 97.1 FM.
Okay, I want to move on to one more example because we're sort of running out of time. This other one that I thought was quite interesting as well, which is a bit different. So this is the one you were telling me about, so with a camera shop business.
Yes.
Photography business. And a father and son.
Yes.
in dispute.
Okay.
Over to you.
Right. Our father had built up a small camera shop and he was getting close to retirement, so he decided to give it to his son. So his son and his son's wife took over. The father didn't actually really, he was just continued in employment, working in the shop as an assistant and doing no doubt stuff. But he didn't like the way the son eventually was running it. And they had a massive bust up, a technical term, and he dismissed him.
The son dismissed his father.
Yes. So I'm remembering this from my tribunal experience. I just listened to it. The son came to the tribunal with a barrister and a solicitor.
Who
paid for that?
Who brought it to ACAS in the first place?
I don't know about the ACAS interactions with this. ACAS will have been involved,
but I suspect
there was some. They were pretty intractable because it's not just common sense and taking a step back and be able to look at things in the cold light of day. It's more difficult when you're dealing with your family, particularly when they're continuing to rub you up the wrong way. So I suspect it was pretty that there were, you know, it was a big hill to climb. Anyway, so it shows how a tribunal approached it and the sort of the reasonableness in that was how it resolved itself. So the father came, having been summarily dismissed with pretty negligible procedure, and the son came with his barrister, which he was having to pay for, and they aired their family problems in public, and I sat there and felt sorry for both of them, and you might ask me what the outcome was. The tribunal found in the father's favour, but awarded him no compensation whatsoever because they said he'd 100% contributed to his dismissal. So they both lost. And the relationship, no doubt, was intact. As I hope now, it's many years on, that they are, you know, talking.
Speaking to each other.
The issue, I suppose, is that for close relationships like that, you find that with husband and wives too, that there's an expectation that you'll behave like family. And employment law is not really, they don't worry about that. And then until it gets broke and somebody has an affair or something, and then it gets, then we realise that it actually is an employment relationship as well.
Is there any support that ACAS offers for employees entering the workplace from their rights and responsibilities with employers?
I mean, all the services that I've described are accessible, like the website, the booklets, the training packages, they're all accessible, whoever you are. Your background matters not one jot. The additional things we do for people starting is we're trying to reach the younger, and that's what we're very interested in Stephen's sort of contact and early, because we do want to access and support the young, the old, everyone. And so what has ACAS been doing? Recently we've been becoming more digital, and if you go on the website, you'll find a couple of Lego videos, which are intended for the young, which one of them deals with sort of a holiday pay issue, which is quite topical at the moment because there's been some case law about holiday pay. And then there's another one which deals with your first day at work. And it talks about, you know, what shall I wear? And it talks about a scenario where an individual is not very happy, isn't given the support and the structures on day one, and then goes and works somewhere else, really. So they're lost to that first employer. It's an investment lost. So there's that sort of stuff. So we're trying to reach the young too. And I actually really want to ask some young people, really, how do you want us to raise awareness with you? And I suspect it's by smartphone, but that's my, you know, just my assumption, really. We do some international work. So, for instance, at the moment, two of my colleagues, at this end of this month, are going to go to another country and do run a course. One of the courses we run, which is an accredited course, is to do with mediation and equipping independent mediators in the workplace. And they're going to do that. We certainly, when we were contributing to the setting up of the early conciliation, the new system, I know we looked at what was happening internationally to see if we could glean best practice from that. So
we'll wind up. So thanks, Caroline, for coming along. I'd like to thank everybody for coming. And thanks once again to Caroline.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.